We're going. Hello, Alexa.
Hello, Jane.
I'm here with, now, do you say Councillor Alexa Forbes, or do you say Alexa Forbes, Councillor?
I think we'll go with the letter. I just usually say I'm Alexa. And if anybody wants to know my last name and that my gene pool probably goes back to somewhere in Scotland, then we'll have the Forbes in there. Councillor is really scary. What does that mean?
Well, exactly. Yeah. So we're here talking about housing, which is hot, such a hot topic at the minute. And I guess I wanted to talk to you. We've talked before about housing and craziness of this place and how we love it and how we hate it at the same time. Well, for me, that's true. But how, where we're at now. Now, I know you've just recently been to Aspen and looked at what's happening there. But I guess set the scene for me.
Okay.
Who are you and what do you do?
Okay. I've got a few hats, but the two that are most valid to this is that I'm a Queenstown Lakes District Councillor. So as far as I see that, I see that I'm a paid volunteer for our community. So I know that's an oxymoron, but basically I just do stuff and try and represent the community. And my other main hat, is that I'm a lecturer in sustainable practice at Otago Polytech. So as an applied university, people come with projects and I help them, support them through a process for a postgraduate diploma. So that's kind of where I sit.
Yeah.
When I went to Aspen, I was part of a sister city delegation.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating. I'd never been to Aspen before, and I didn't really expect to go. And I'm really glad we're limiting to this discussion to housing, because there's so many topics.
We could be here for hours.
No, it's not.
To go back to your other hat around sustainability, do you think you're, and I hate that term, but do you think you're seen as the greeny part of the council, and do you think that hinders the conversations you have?
Yes and yes, and I hate the word sustainability. I don't like to use it. It doesn't mean anything to anyone.
No.
And I've come from a communications background, and so I know quite a bit about business, especially small business. I've employed a lot of people over the years and worked in a sector like that, and I know how hard it is. And I know the importance of specificity, if that's such a word, of language.
Yeah.
And sustainability has none of those things.
Yeah.
And nobody knows what the hell you're talking about when you say you're in sustainable practice.
No.
I really like to change the name of my employer.
Yeah.
But that's not on the cards right now. But I like to think in terms of where I work is in a regenerative space.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, other problem I have with sustainability is it's not good enough. Sustainability just means you can do things forever. That's all
the
it means.
Same. Yeah.
Do things for same forever.
Yeah.
So under that scenario, there is not a single thing in the human way of being on this tiny little bit of the planet. Because remember, we only occupy. We can't be underwater, so we've got to be above water, and we can't go higher than about 5,000 meters without losing oxygen. So the very tiny sliver of this planet, which has the smallest change in that tiny sliver, is a real problem for all of us.
Yeah.
So we're here by accident.
Yeah.
And from a religiously, let's not go down that track. Anyway, so there's only, the scenario that we live under is quite tenuous.
Yeah.
And so sustainability to me is, let's get rid of all that other that word and talk about actually being a bit resilient and living on this and being adaptable to the change. And of course, climate change at the moment is a big problem for us. And people get confused in that argument because the climate's always changed. But the climate hasn't changed very much while humans were on the planet.
Yes.
And that is a major issue. So I think of sustainability in those terms, in terms of us being able to regenerate a bit, get our environment a bit more suitable for us, because at the moment the change is anthropomorphic. We know that now. That's definitely, it's not. You won't find a scientist that's not paid by somebody.
You've had your new word, toilet paper, this morning. Learn a new word on your toilet paper. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Anthropomorphic,
caused by humans.
My friend used to have toilet paper that had a new word on it every day that she'd learn.
I hope the print. I hope the print was sore. I wouldn't want to be putting that stuff on my delicate bottom. If it had poisons in it.
I love it. So I know that Queenstown's gone through a lot. In the 10 years I've been here, I think it's stayed the same, but it's also changed a lot. It has through, building, through the amount of people who are passing through it nowadays, through the amount of people who are coming here. But also I think it's stayed the same in its courageousness, its creativity, but also that thing about a lot of people say, oh, there's no community and there's no, what, where are the people who are doing stuff under the surface?
Oh, bullshit.
Well, yeah, totally. But I love the fact that it is there. You have to kind of find it. Where are we at right now in terms of housing?
Housing. In Aspen, we've got a real housing problem in Queenstown. It is a real housing problem. It is as bad as Auckland's housing problem, except it's on a different scale, and our poor people aren't as poor as the ones in Auckland and can probably move away if they really need to. Yep. So we don't have quite the same extremes of dire straits. But apart from that, we have a major, major housing problem. How big it really is, we're not even sure.
Yeah.
We don't measure much. But there has been a survey done by the Housing Trust that gives us a pretty good picture of things. And let's just accept for the fact that they're bad. Now, in Aspen, they had the same problem 30 years ago. They experienced, over those last, about 1970s, they started going through this property boom, as we've gone through and are going through. And that led to skyrocketing property values, as we know, and a proliferation of second and third home ownership, which increasingly shut out low, middle, and then finally even high-income earners. So the doctors, the CEOs, they can't afford to buy a house there either. So this it actually has the largest billionaire count of any valley in the whole world. So the billionaires are now chasing out the millionaires.
Yep.
And this has had huge ramifications for the community. You've shut out by price this whole demographic, so you've got a huge pool of commuters coming into the town from bedroom communities, and some of them travel an hour and a half each way. You know, so it's 3 hours out of their day. Mind you, I see that NZ Ski is going to be expecting people to travel an hour each way from Cromwell, and I think this is okay. They're a business, and it's a short-term solution for them. I hope they realise it's a short-term. If not, they'll probably realise that fairly soon. There's a lot of associated issues around land use, around transport, around social issues, and basically you end up with this high-value, low-occupancy model.
Yeah.
And what happens when you've got that, so you've got the houses worth a lot of money, but there's hardly anybody living in them because the people that own those houses don't want dirty renters, and they don't want holiday makers either. They only want it for themselves for 3 weeks a year, and as you said, you've been on a balloon ride and seen...
and seen those houses with nobody in them.
So what happens is this challenges the very fabric of your community because the town centre has a decreasing relevance to people.
Yeah.
So there's the shops that people want to buy in aren't there. So they've moved out down the valley, now down the valley.
Yeah.
The services, so eventually the services like the police stations, the schools and the hospitals all moved down the valley.
You don't have your local butcher, your baker, your candlestick maker.
No.
Which is where community is created.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you actually gut your community, you gut your neighbours. It starts off with you losing your low-income people, then you lose your middle-income, then you lose your high-income, and suddenly you go, holy moly, we've got no community
left.
And that's what they found in Aspen. So they have done a lot of work, and what I'm saying for Queenstown is this is really expensive work, and I don't think we want to do it.
Mm.
I think we want to start doing things now, so that we don't end up in this situation, because that is the future we're headed for, and I really think we need to make no bones about that.
Yeah.
We will gut our community if we don't get those houses occupied and people able to afford to live here.
Yeah.
So that's the big thing I learned around housing from Aspen. So I guess the next question is, what do we do about it, is it?
Yeah, I guess
or
so.
Or do we need to explore that a bit more?
Well, I just think They're two different places, i.e. they're on different parts of the planet. They experience different things, but also what can we take from what they did and do right now? Like, what can we do right now?
Okay, the two different places is really interesting, and I've seen some discussion about that. We're not Aspen. No, we're not. But we're heading down that trajectory of gutting a community, the low value, the high value, low occupancy model, which isn't going to serve us well in the future because we're New Zealanders and we like egalitarianism. And the thing is that the Aspen solutions, I don't think, will really work for us because we're not Aspen.
Yeah.
We have to find our own solution. So what we can learn from is where the trajectories are the same, where we're doing the same sorts of things, and that we're going to end up in the same place. So from there, what do we do? Well, Aspen has developed a two-tier market. So you have a local real estate market and you have a free market, and the local real estate market is financed by a tax on all real estate transactions. So and when you've got billion and an average house price of $4 million, your transaction on a transaction tax is quite a hefty chunk. So you can build quite a lot from that. Yeah. So they've built over the last 30 years something like 3,000 housing units. Not all in the town centre. Some of them are out a bit, yeah. Kind of down valley a wee bit. And that's been a really, really successful thing.
We can hear the chicken just outside.
The rooster, he's going off. It's not even 4 in the morning. No. He should be over that by now, this time of the day. What do you think it is? I'm looking him out the window. Anyway, so where was I with that? Yeah, okay, I know where I was. I did know where I was. Who was I, Jane? She can't remember now.
Building some parts, some places in, some places
that's
out.
That's right. So they've been building this affordable accommodation, and that's been really successful. They've got a target of housing 50% of the people that work in the town in the town. So that's how far it's gone. Now, to put this in some context, Vale, which really we don't have a lot in common with, it's a constructed city. We have a lot in common with Aspen. We've got a shared history.
Yep.
They were silver mining at the same time as we were gold mining, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's the areas led their tourism boom. They had other tourism before that, but that's what really led it. And yeah, so very similar history, a lot in common. So there is stuff to learn from them. But so Vale, down the valley a bit, or down towards Denver, has 90% of its rates bills, or their equivalent, go out of town. So that's what happens when you just don't intervene in the market.
Yeah.
You let it go.
Yeah.
Aspen is trying to get that to 50% in their area. I'm not sure exactly what it is now, but it's quite high, but it's not 90% and it's not 50%, and they're aiming for 50%. And that is, but the thing is about that, where I'm really uncomfortable with it is two markets. We don't do that in New Zealand. We've never had two markets. We've had, you know, egalitarianism. We still have to hold our own values.
Yep.
And Queensland might have slightly different values from the rest of New Zealand, but I believe that all of New Zealand is in this trajectory. Because as climate change bites, as travel becomes even more accessible to great numbers of people around the world, anywhere in New Zealand is going to face this problem. So Queensland has the opportunity to really kind of experiment with a few things, and I'd like us to be agile and to fail fast and to do things and see what happens. Our community doesn't like that, so I don't know how we go, but certainly the two-tier market system, the other thing I really dislike about it is it's a lottery.
Yeah.
You go along once a year, and there's this many houses that are going for sale, and this is the price, and it is affordable for most people, and if your name gets drawn out of the hat, you get to buy it. I said, do we want to run our lives on a lottery?
Yeah.
Well, not me. I'm not a gambling type.
Yeah. Because I know that when, I don't know if you, were you there at the housing talk conversation that happened last year?
No, I wasn't.
It was amazing, and I think there was lots of different talk and everyone was very excited, but I think one of the things that came out of it was one of the speakers was talking about how he was an Aucklander and he said, you know, I come to Queenstown and I see all this stuff that you're doing, and it would be amazing if you could be people who like you say, tried it and failed fast.
Yeah.
Like, try stuff. Like, we have the ability for people to go, whoa, look at what they're doing in Queenstown. Yeah. Like, amazing. Or, oh my God, did you see what they did in Queenstown? And for us to go, yeah, but we tried that and it didn't work. Yeah. Rather than be, I think we're still very safe. We're still very scared. I don't think people are any different to anywhere else in the world, as in you want somewhere that your family can grow up and your children can be happy and your children can be safe. That's no different wherever you go in the world. But I think we should be slightly, let's just try these different things.
I think something else has happened too. Those are the main drivers for people. But somehow we've overlaid it with this acceptance that to make a lot of money out of property and not pay tax on it is all right.
Yeah.
To me, that's not all right on any level. It's not all right on a national level, which I think we have to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. So, and I think people are starting to think it's all right to have second and third homes that are empty too.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's all right either.
No.
So there's some things that we need to try. And I think there's some tools that we could try. And I'm prepared to push them forward if I can find some support for them. And I've written a report on it, and you've seen that. And
I will link to that report.
Yeah, and to my also to my blog with the four things that I think we could try. But I'll just quickly cover off a couple of the other things that Aspen does, because it's done a lot of things.
Yeah.
The other thing they do is they build a lot of affordable housing.
Yeah.
That's rented. So rentable housing, which is a really, really good thing to do. When anybody builds a new development of any sort, any commercial development, they have to, what they call, mitigate for their workers. So they have to house, I think that's something like 50-60%. It's a big amount. They have to provide housing for that. But it's still not 100%. So, you know, and but this has actually really slowed down development. So there's consequences to doing these things. But now Aspen's found itself in a situation where it's so difficult to develop there, and the community plan, which is kind of a little bit like our Shaping Our Future plans,
yep.
Their community plan, which is done by all sorts of people, anybody can take part in that, they have put a commercial moratorium on any commercial development until they can align their community plan with their town laws.
So things have stopped.
Stopped. Okay. Come to, can you just imagine how our developers would react if we did that?
Oh yes. My God, no.
But you know, so they've stood up and gone, this is just chaos. We've got a community plan that says a whole part of things, and we've got a town full of people that are voting that don't necessarily agree with that community yep. plan, because in Aspen you only vote if you live in the, if you own the property within the town limits, and a lot of the people that have input into the community plan live in other towns
yep.
and yep. they commute to Aspen every day. So there's all those sorts of issues, and they're all tied up. So they've actually stopped any commercial development until they can align their plans properly. So that's, you know, so those are some of the things that they are doing around this. Mitigating housing. Oh, if you build a big house, there's a lot of mitigation that goes on. If you build something bigger than a certain size, you have to, and it's going to be empty, or even if it's not going to be empty, I think, you have to pay energy mitigation. So you have to pay into a fund for renewable energies. So there's a lot of things that they're doing in their housing area or that affects housing to try and change things.
And I know this kind of moves into some, well, maybe another conversation about the way that houses are built here and that whole standard thing. But like that whole conversation around people who need to use, can use solar, people who can use, you know, there are so many different ways and conversations that need to be had. You know, we wander around houses that are in like all year sunshine and don't have solar on them. New buildings that are built, say, out at 5 Mile that don't have solar on them. And you kind of just going, why has this conversation never happened?
Well, there's very good reason for that. And I was talking to you before about when we think about things, we actually need to consider the whole system
mm-hmm.
and systems thinking. So anything that is happening is part of a greater system. And to understand the system of things like the solar, and I can actually answer that question if you're interested.
I am.
Is that In our system in New Zealand, you have to look back. You always have to look back before you can go forward. And in our electricity and energy system, we forced people, and we did force them, after, in Think Big, sort of late 70s, I think, under Robert Muldoon, we built a whole pile of hydroelectric dams. Now, the only way we could afford to build those dams at huge capital cost was to force everybody into it. So we dismantled anybody's yeah. little solar systems, anybody's little hydro systems that they had running their milk and sheep, were all dismantled as people were forced onto the national grid. Okay, most people wanted it. Most people saw it as a great idea. Yeah. But that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So people were discouraged to do anything else because we needed everybody's money
yeah.
to buy the electricity from the national grid so that we could install those huge hydro
yeah.
projects. And so that's a carry-on from that. So people have never been incentivized to it. And now that continues
yeah.
because you've now got all that infrastructure.
You've created a model that people are too scared or don't know any different.
Well, but you actually can't get out of it yeah. because the thing is that those hydro dams will eventually come to the end of their lives. Then yeah. they have to be dismantled.
Yeah.
You must have the capital for that. So you've got to keep people on those systems. And so that's one reason. The yeah. second reason is that 70% of our stationary energy in New Zealand, stationary energy is what we use in our homes and stuff, already comes from renewable sources.
Mm-hmm.
Government has ticked that box.
Yeah.
So why on earth
would
we do anything else?
Yeah.
And then if every time somebody puts solar on top of their house, they're not buying from a system that requires them to buy from it to carry on.
Very true.
So if we don't look at these whole systems, we can't understand these things properly. So that's the answer to why we don't use solar. And you can see now the energy companies seeing that writing on the wall and going, holy hell. I mean, we just saw it in Wellington, very interesting case, where the Wellington Council decided to save X number of dollars a year by changing all their street lighting to LEDs. And then the power company came in and said, if you do that, we'll go bust. You need to. If you do that, what we're going to do is we're going to up your lines charges to make up the difference of the cost that you're not paying us.
And there's always more parts to the jigsaw puzzle than people, you know, sitting around in cafes talk about.
That's why you need to look at the whole system.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, so that's that one. So that feeds into our housing problem as well. And I would encourage everybody to get onto solar systems if they can, but it is going to stop our energy companies.
So if we want to learn more about what the council is talking about, where can we go?
their website, it's horrible.
Yes, I'm really I
sorry
agree.
It's so hard, and I really want to
paying my fines is hard.
The whole thing's hard, and you know, as a council has a lot of constraints. I don't want to make excuses for them. I'll just tell you that I totally accept that the website is awful. It's really hard to get information. If you're really interested in stuff, and if you ring me and ask me nicely, I will find you what information you require.
Facebook page is awesome though. But particularly Poole, in the winter time.
I have to say that Michelle Poole is a legend.
Unbelievable. Mm. I get up in the morning and look, see what the roads are doing, and she's there. Boom. Bish, bash, bosh.
We're really good at that little stuff.
Amazing.
And it's not little stuff. It's huge stuff
to do. Yeah, it's huge stuff.
But it's we still, our web page is actually still all council speak for people that you think would be fully engaged. And of course people aren't. They need information much easier and much quicker.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to fix that one and fix transport and fix housing.
Why
and
not?
Fix waste all
we
at
still,
once.
We still live in paradise though. To round up, Alexa, give us your secret must-do go-to places. That now I'm not now going to totally ruin and not make secret
you
anymore.
Think
if you
that.
Have a bad day in council, where do you go? Mine's Sam Summers. That's my go-to.
I like that. I walk every morning by the lake, which I really, really enjoy because I live in Frankton, and so it's just the lake's right there, and I do that every single morning, and it changes every day, so it's really, really beautiful, so I love that. I go up, my secret go-to place where I take other people is up at Lake Alter.
Oh,
up around there, and then up around the back, over into the Wye Saddle. I shouldn't have said that, but my God, it's beautiful over there. And I just am always gobsmacked at how close real alpine activity is.
And I think we complain about how busy this place is getting, but I know I can drive or walk 10 minutes to somewhere and there's absolutely nobody still. So, you know,
the word is still.
Yeah, still. Not forever.
No. So this, I think it's an issue.
Yeah.
Our management of people at the of numbers of people and where they go is really seriously wanting. And I hear you when you're in that congestion and when you're up unhappy about that. And I don't know how, but we are looking at ways, and I need everybody else's advice on this and input on this, of how do we manage our growth to the point where we are not losing amenity as a community, because we've lost a lot of amenity because of numbers. And this whole thing of bringing in higher value tourism, to me, is a complete crap. I mean, the thing is that if you're making the bed of a backpacker or you're making a bed of someone that's paying $1,000 a night, you still get paid minimum wage, not on.
Yeah.
We have to figure out how the value of tourism can filter further down through the community and actually contribute to our lifestyles and contribute to our amenity.
So many more conversations to be had. We can find Alexa on Facebook, Councillor Alexa Forbes, and I'm sure there'll be a few comments. Thank you very much.